Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show.
I was raised
a Sunday school teacher,
Mormon,
raised Catholic,
Baptist church.
I was married and I had children and I was coming out. Was I also going to lose my church?
There's no way
guilt
that you can be gay and be a Christian. That's not true.
The shame.
I didn't stop being a spiritual person.
Knowing that they were all going to disown me, it was really hard.
I'm still working on giving myself a clean slate.
God doesn't make mistakes. I'm not a mistake, and He does love me.
You are only as sick as your darkest secret. Bring those hurts into the light.
Is it worth the cost to make it stop? All on red, will the house take the loss? Say that nothing I do or nothing I say will make you turn your back away. But will you feel the same? Will you kiss my face? Tell me we have a bond that can't be erased.
Hi, welcome to the Desert Sanctuary Podcast. I'm Laura Forehand. I am here with Carl Forehand. And anything you want to say hi? Anything?
No, I don't want to say anything. You just go.
We're just going to get right into the meat of this podcast because we are so excited and we have a lot to talk about. We have Canadian alternative pop. Is that correct? Alternative pop. Okay. Artist Adeline. She fuses powerfully evocative music with an emotionally unbound lyrical honesty. This authenticity appeals to her growing fan base and is why she is considered one of the best young songwriters in the country and a rising Canadian talent that takes listeners to angelic heights. And that's from Billboard magazine. She has released four critically acclaimed studio albums, garnering millions of streams, dozens of editorial playlist ads, and a nomination for Pop Album of the Year at the Western Canadian Music Awards.
Adeline's upcoming EP, Hymnal, in March of 2024, is inspired by the stories of the Bad Believer community. Produced by platinum-selling musician Chris Cody from Beach House, the Ya-Ya-Ya's, Grizzly Bear, the EP opens with snippets of voices from the community, followed by Brave, a coming-out ballad highlighting the vulnerability and anxiety of coming out to family and religious communities. Following tracks speak to the heartbreak of being rejected by community, the fatigue of justifying who you are, and the failure of a church system to embody the kind of love they preach. The tone then shifts to a more hopeful gaze with, if something is good, encourages us to fight for valued connections, and closes with Adeline's love letter to her parents called What Love Is All About, showcasing the power of love when one is fully accepted and embraced.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That was a beautiful introduction. I appreciate that.
We tried really hard not to stumble over our words, and I am like the worst. I will just admit.
No, that was great. I just loved you saying the yeah, yeah, yes. I thought it was gold for me. That made me happy.
I was impressed. That was not all of your bio.
There's
stuff like I saw the show. What's his name?
MacGyver.
I saw that.
Yeah, the reboot.
Oh, the reboot. Because we were okay. Not as old as we are.
I'm not that old, but yes, because MacGyver was out in it was the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's old.
He's from our era.
Yeah.
Not that that's old, but I wasn't able to sing fully at that point. They did a reboot, so I had something on there.
Oh, I didn't know there was a reboot. Well, that's exciting. Yeah. That's exciting.
So exciting to see your music all over the place. And we, Adeline, we get to listen to stories. So there's like 300 people. Mm-hmm. Have told us their story essentially, and we always start out with tell us your story. But the thing about stories is we consider them sacred, we think it's an honor that we get to sit here and hear your story. So we want to invite you to do that, just to start out this discussion by telling us who you are, where you came from, what's your story in whatever detail you want to tell us. And I told you you could cuss, and you laughed. So I don't know what that means.
You did. full freedom. Full freedom here.
Yeah, just in whatever detail you want. Tell us about Adeline.
Yeah, well, thank you. I love that. I love that stories are sacred. And, you know, when people open their heart and share and are vulnerable, I do think that's a beautiful thing. And I think we need that more than ever, especially if we're from religious spaces, because I think part of my story is really what can happen when you don't feel like you can share your story and you don't feel like you're being heard, or that there's an expectation of what you should be. And so there's a lot of performative things that come from that. And that, you know, that goes beyond sexual orientation. I mean, there was tons of performative stuff that I experienced growing up from really great people. And so I guess I would start with that. I would say that maybe what's unique about my story compared to other folks maybe who have come from church backgrounds that are LGBTQ+, is I had like a great upbringing. I loved church, and I was really involved. I was a worship leader pretty much as soon as I could sing and play in church. I was leading worship, and I ended up getting a job after high school. I went to Bible college, and I ended up working as an assistant youth pastor for a while leading worship. A Pentecostal evangelical fundamentalist world. But I loved the community. I feel like I mourn for that still. I miss that. But the thing about it was I was kind of always able to fit in that world for a really long time until I started noticing things that weren't I wasn't allowed to be. And then as soon as that dissonance comes in, you know, I feel like a lot of church people have that at some point. My mother's going through that right now, being the minister's wife to a LGBTQ daughter. You know, as soon as you start to shift out of what that expectation is, you know, you often will have a crisis of faith mm-hmm. where you're trying to understand, because, you know, I think what gets us in trouble a lot is confusing morality, like things that we would all consider to be important, not killing each other, not hurting each other, not violating each other. When we start to confuse those with things, we put those all in the same camp as these other, you know, quote unquote sins. I do think that that gets people in a lot of hot water. And so there's a lot of hiding. And then that perpetuates this facade that it's possible. And then when people think that it's possible to be perfect and they're not, there's a lot of self-harm and hatred that comes from that. And I really don't think that it was ever meant to be that. So I would say I'm like an optimistic deconstructionist in the sense that I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't hate the church. I don't hate Christianity. There's still parts of my faith that I am still grappling with. But I do think that it's important, as I know you've done, to start to look at, like, why is there dissonance in me? Why doesn't this teaching make sense? To be able to question and not be silenced, or for questions to be seen as questioning authority. And so I kind of started to notice things about myself that didn't line up with the way that I had been taught. And at the time in my life, I was in my early 30s, and it just was easier to run away. And then I went through a period of time where I identified with the Jonah and the whale story massively, where I was trying to run, but I felt like I couldn't totally run from God. And I started getting into some substance abuse and some drugs. And it was like, I was just trying. It's like you grew up with Jesus as your best friend. Mm. And then all of a sudden, you feel like you can't be in that world anymore, because with me, I was noticing that I was queer. And it wasn't something that I grew up feeling at all. It was something that kind of came later. I don't know if it was representation or, like, I just didn't even know that was an option growing up. I knew the clobber passages. I knew that these scriptures said that it was an abomination. And so I think that there was just a huge part of me that just wouldn't go there ever. And it, you know, it was a different time. That wasn't even something that was an option. So as the world changed and as I changed and kind of got out of my Christian bubble and started experiencing different kinds of people and different kinds of religions, I noticed that my attractions started to broaden. And then that brought on a lot of panic. And then that caused me to run, because I didn't really know what to do with that, with those feelings. And then I would say that I ran for a long time. And then it's just sort of been this beautiful journey of coming back to my own, what I do still feel connected to with my faith. And really, like, getting to make my own rules, which I know sounds like, for a lot of, like, fundamentalists, like the end of the world. But to me, it's like, people have a lot of different arguments. But for me, being back in communion with God in my way is much better than having no access to God at all because of this, like, carnal sin that's in me. Mm-hmm. So I think that we do a disservice to people when we create these, like, rules that we claim to know for sure, when we all know that we interpret verses. And then that actually cuts off people's access to God. So if someone's goal is for people to be in communion with God, then that is not a great way to do it. So I started to, you know, come into my own. I came out to my family, which was the worst. It's just nothing scarier than that. But I am, you know, it's been a journey with my family. But my brother's a minister, and my dad was a minister, but they love me, and we're working through it. I'm one of the lucky ones for sure. And so from that, it just kind of spilled out of me. I just felt like with this record, which I know we'll get into, it just felt very clear to me, because just from having conversations and having music and different TV shows, I started to connect to a larger group of people like me, which is now called the Bad Believer Community. It's a nonprofit that helps queer people with religious trauma. Mm. And so I started hearing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of stories from people who were also, like, trying to reconcile their queerness and their spirituality. And just from all of these stories, I just was like, I have to make a record about this. So, mm-hmm. So that's what Hymnal is all about, is that journey.
Yeah. So I heard you say the divine, the God. I think about that thing that Jesus said about the kingdom of heaven is within you. And in our deconstruction journey, I've noticed that we've both been drawn that way, just finally having the whatever, the understanding to go inside. And we've heard hundreds of stories on this podcast, and all of the people that are doing better after leaving organized religion are those that have learned that's the number one thing they say. When I went inside, then things began to progress and things began to get better. And I like that's part of your story. That's encouraging.
Well, we're kind of encouraged not to go inside. Like, we're encouraged to go inside to look for our sin.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not often taught to trust ourselves, our instincts. And then, of course, there's like, when there's the devil at play, like the ultimate ace card, it's like the ultimate trump card, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, like when I start to feel peace about something, someone's like, well, that's the enemy. So it causes a lot of confusion as to what you can trust. So learning to actually fully listen to your inner self is really hard when you come from evangelical backgrounds.
Yeah. We wrote a chapter, or I wrote a chapter in the last book that we wrote. I'm looking over to the bookshelf because there's a pile of them over there. That's where most of my books end up. but there was a chapter called Cultivated Ignorance, and it had to do with my understanding of racism and my understanding of queer issues. We have a lot of well-cultivated beliefs, like you said, that we know we're right. We've got to be right. You know, we've invested a lot in that being right. But in many cases, it's just like that. It's cultivated ignorance. It's not understanding, right?
Yeah. And then it's just so hard to move from it because it causes an identity crisis. I mean, you've done the work to do that. And that's like a brave thing to do, because there are a lot of people who, like, that feels like death, and it is death. It is death to like look at it. But it's also like, I think some people are just built in a way where it's like, you can't put your head in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
When I was listening to your story, you made several references to this idea, and you described it in different, with a few different words, hiding, running away. You used a couple other words that I didn't write down, so I don't remember them. I'm getting old. But I've heard people describe it. One of our best friends came on our podcast, told her story, and I just remember it really vividly. She talked about getting small. Did it feel like that? Can you just talk a little bit more about what that feels like when you can't be yourself, you can't.
Yeah, when you feel small. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think small and alone. I remember Googling, this was a while ago now, but I just remember Googling like about being Christian and gay. And there was just like not a lot there. There's much more now. But I just sort of was like, it's funny because I wasn't the only one, but it feels like you're the only one. Like, you just don't know anyone else really that has gone through it. I knew a couple guys that did, but I didn't know any women. And even it's funny because it should all be the same, but even in the videos I did find, it was always men. And so that also made me feel even more kind of like, where are these people? And then when I would talk to my non-Christian friends about how I was feeling, they didn't, especially my gay non-Christian friends, didn't really want to talk to me about Jesus. you know, there's a lot of like pain in that community from being rejected. So they don't necessarily always feel comfortable talking. And then I couldn't really talk to my Christian community. I didn't know who would be safe to speak to. So yeah, you kind of just end up getting a little cornered. And I remember the first time I went to an affirming church, I was watching a TV show, and in one of the episodes, it's so funny because of course these exist, but I didn't know. I had no idea. So I was watching a TV show and they mentioned this affirming church in Los Angeles, and I didn't even know that that existed. So I went one Sunday, and it was, I think that was actually the way that I could, you know, there, everyone's gay and transgender, and not everyone's transgender, but there are different kinds of people there. And there are probably straight people there too. There are allies, and everyone was like taking communion together and singing Give Thanks. And oh, I broke. Like, I just cried because I was like, okay, if I want to go back here, I can. Like, there is a way forward. And it's wild to think that people can feel like, I didn't feel like there was a way forward in my faith at all. So when I was in that space, I thought, oh, wow, maybe I do have like the agency to make a choice. I'm not just automatically condemned because of who I am. So yeah, I mean, that is a lonely and small place for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about Bad Believer?
Mm.
Talk a little bit about that. And was that part of your, I mean, did that help as far as was it healing for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, Bad Believer was, Bad Believer was such a crazy story because here I was just raising my hands up being like, I'm alone. Where is everybody? And I think I had just come out maybe 6 months before all this happened. And I had written a song that was licensed to a TV show. And when I came out, I had released a music video for the song. And as a family, I mentioned to my family, like, listen, I'm going to want to make some kind of, I don't want to hide anymore, but I also don't need to like splash it all over the internet. But I want there to be one place where people can read and know about me. So we decided, I wanted to respect them too. They were just, their heads were reeling. Like, what is this? What are we going to do with this? Are we going to tell your aunts and uncles and all this stuff? Mm-hmm. So we decided they were comfortable with me putting my story in the description of a YouTube video. Cause you know how you can go to YouTube and you can click read more and you can read about, but no one ever does that. Like, no one ever actually clicks on that. So I was like, oh, that's a perfect place to put my story. So I wrote it up and I shared it with my family. I was like, how are we feeling this? Are we comfortable? Like, I'm a people pleaser. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone was okay with it.
Yeah.
And I put it up on my YouTube channel, and then it sat there. I think I released the song in February or March of 2020, and it just sat there for a while, and I thought, oh, okay, I've done it. Like, I did it. I did the big statement. And then the song got picked up by a TV show. And then like overnight, I had thousands and thousands of people going to YouTube to look for the song.
Oh, wow.
And when they found the song, because the fans were invested, they were like, who is this? What is this song about? Because I use female pronouns. So I feel like it is a LGBTQ+ sounding song. They read more. So then I started getting thousands of emails from people just saying, this is me. I grew up in the church. I don't feel like I'm struggling. I have a lot of trauma. I went through conversion therapy programs, like just devastating stories. So I scrambled. I was like, I got to do something. Yeah. So I made a Google form and put it up on Twitter. And I just basically was like, hey, I've gotten all your emails. Does anyone want to talk? Like, we can talk about it. So I made a sign up form. From there, hundreds of people signed up. And so I started doing Zoom calls with like small groups of 6 or 7 people. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And what happened was, after the calls, people were feeling so connected and seen for the first time that they were all like hanging around being like, well, now what? Like, we don't want to just have one call. And mm-hmm. I finally met people. So it became very clear that we needed to make it like a nonprofit. So we started that process. So now, yeah, so we started in September of 2020. So we're just over 3 years old. And we mostly provide community for for queer folks from religious backgrounds. We have, you know, different kinds of denominations and religions, but I would say primarily Christian and primarily like evangelical, some Catholic too, but like a lot of different kinds of people. And some people are faith, are still in faith. Some people are not. So we have a very diverse community. Really the only thing that connects us is just that journey. So now we have a yearly retreat and we provide resources and we provide financial support for therapy. And so it's just kind of, I mean, it all grew from just a song. Like it's just wild that this, yeah, a song could do that. But it has been, to answer your question, it's been so healing because I've gotten to, the more stories I hear, the more assured I am that this was, that it is okay. Mm-hmm. And that I am on the right path. I've gotten to process through so many things with people. We meet multiple times a month in group sessions and we have so much in common, but we also have a lot in common as far as like feeling like if we can love each other so much, then God must love us too. Mm-hmm. You know, like we can't be fatally condemned in abominations when there's so much freedom and joy in our conversations and in searching and looking for God together. So.
You know what I think is so like beautiful. And I wrote it down. I wrote down the word community because I think that's the big thing. You know, I mean, I don't remember if we're already recording or we said something before we started recording, but I think that's the biggest thing is the sense of community. So when you're deconstructing and you're questioning, you leave church like we did, and that sense, you know, you feel like that community is just kind of the floor just dropped out from under your feet. And where, yes, do I fit in now? And so I just think that's so beautiful that you have created this community where like people who once felt like they didn't belong anywhere are now belonging to this community and they belong to themselves because they can be authentically themselves. And so, I mean, when people ask, you know, that we got that question a lot when we first left the church, well, what about community? Well, what about community? Mm. And I'm like, we have some of the most beautiful community online, like we're doing right now. So like, I just think that's such a beautiful thing that you have. And I know it may seem like, oh, it just, you know, accidental, it just happened based on a song, but, the fact that you've taken that and run with it and just created this space where people feel safe, I just think is huge, huge.
Mm. Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I mean, they saved me too. That's what's so
right.
Oh
that's,
yeah.
Like that's the beauty of the community. Yes. Right? Yeah. Yes.
And I would say that there are a lot of themes that come up in initial, we call our first meetings, initial calls. And it's kind of how people get involved with us. And in initial calls, there are so many themes that repeat. And one of them is just people just being devastated by losing their communities or like churches that made them feel like they were accepted. But then, you know, like when push came to shove, they weren't really, or, you know, like there's a lot of bait and switch that happens in general, like not just with LGBTQ issues.
Yeah. All are welcome except once you're.
Yeah. Or you're welcome, or people that aren't from church backgrounds that don't, like I knew right away if I went into some churches that I might be welcome, but I'd never be able to
exactly
be on the worship team or specifically work with kids right. Because, you know, there's so much negative narratives from the 80s and 90s and 2000s around LGBTQ people and like children, like how they're dangerous. So, but it's 2024 and there's still churches that claim to be welcoming, but and they'll let you do certain things in church, maybe offer communion or maybe take the offering plate around and gather tithes, but they can't work with kids.
Right.
So it's just, there's a lot still that's really harmful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like in your community that one of the key things to it is authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so I have this little saying at the end of everything, be who you are and be where you are. So be present and be authentic. And I have them tattooed on my arms even. But you mentioned agency a while ago and, you know, having your own agency. And when people have that PTSD from coming out of religion, Who am I? What do I believe? What do I do? And I see a lot of pastors, especially, come out of religion, and almost instantly they're starting a group, but they're just starting something new. And then in a year they reinvent themselves because they got to do something. Mm-hmm. Right. And I try to tell them, before you do something, you need to know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, you don't need to be doing anything. And Laura always says about community, you know, along with Brene Brown, belong to yourself first. And it's really, really important to know who you are, right?
And I think a healthy community can foster that in somebody, because I mean, I can imagine as people find your community, you know, they may not be in that space where they know even who they are at that point, but having a community that is accepting and loving, just, you know, whether you are quote unquote broken or, you know, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's been wild about the whole thing, because I grew up in churches, and like my dad was the kind of pastor where we would probably move churches every 3 to 4 years. So lots and lots of like going in, restructuring, and then moving on. But I knew like the ins and outs of that culture. And again, like, I don't hate on that culture, but there are some things about it that are problematic that I've noticed, even with being like the founder of this community. There's realities of like the board and all these things, and we have meetings, and it takes everything in me to like push against some of the things that like attendance, or like how is it growing, like these metrics that are, and it's funny, because what I've realized with Bad Believer is like, I never know what people need or don't need, and who am I to judge just because if our numbers are down 1 month, that means that people, in my mind, I'm like, if people are in our community for a year and that's all they needed to be before they went off, it's an online community. Sometimes people are like, I need to get off the computer and go into real life. Mm-hmm. And that's all they needed it for. Then we love them and wish them the best. Or if people drop off for a while and 2 years later are coming back, there's that feeling, because they grew up in churches too. There's that feeling of like, are you mad at me? And so we're constantly being like, no, you come in and out of here as much as you want. You can drop off. You don't get a gold star for attendance here. This is like supposed to support you. So that is like a big change. Like even with volunteering, like there's a lot of like overusing volunteers in church systems. So I'm constantly checking to be like, am I resorting back to program behavior, or am I doing this the right way? You have to like check yourself all the time when you come from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to shift gears if we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you're in charge. This is about what you think, so you can. I interviewed a preacher once, and I said, I'm going to ask you some questions. He said, ask me what you want. I'll answer it however I want. And I reserve the right to take it wherever I want. You know. So you have that Love freedom. It. But I'm a big fan of Bob Dylan. So I'll tell you a little bit about my music taste. I like Nora Jones, you know, and some of that kind of stuff. But I'm really intrigued by poets and prophets and songwriters, and how similar they are. And it seems to me that poets and prophets were always trying to explain something that can't be explained. And could you talk about, you know, the songwriting process, and I notice in my writing also that the writing, when you write, like it comes to you and you start to write, and then it gets fine tuned, and then it sometimes becomes something totally different, and all those things happen within songwriting. Can you talk about that and what it means to you, how you see it? Is that making sense?
That's not a real question. No, it's making total sense. It's like we're taking these, they're impossible to define. I mean, Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, I mean, these are some of the greats of taking human experience, finding a way to turn a phrase that makes you feel like you feel seen, which is hard to do when you have Music is a little more, even more tricky, because with poetry, there is, tends to be, even unless you're stuck into some kind of pentameter, there tends to be a little bit more fluidity as far as like, okay, well, I need to add in these extra few words to really like get the point across. But with music, like, you are often limited with how many syllables you have depending on that phrase. Bob Dylan was a little bit more rambly, like more poetic that way. So I think he lyrics are king for him, right? Yeah. But with pop music, especially the genre that I work in, if you're overly wordy, it just doesn't sound catchy. So you're constantly trying to find ways to shorten a phrase or to get a phrase punctuating where it should. But that really means that you have like limited real estate to try to get your point across. So it is a little bit like, what is the emotion I want people to feel, and how can I get that being felt in limited space? And with this record, it was even more tricky for me, because I'm used to writing about love, and I feel like everybody has experiences with love. That's that universal theme. So this one was harder, because I was like, okay, how do I talk about religious trauma and purity culture and all of these things, LGBT issues, in 5-word phrases? Like, this is going to be tricky, but it felt like a really important challenge. And so with this album, I think I just focused on really like getting to the heart of the emotion of it and the story of it, because people can sit all day and we can argue about theology, but at the end of the day, like, when people are telling their stories, you can't argue with someone's story. You can't argue with how someone feels or how they've been made to feel. That's right. That's just true. Whether or not you like it, that doesn't negate the fact that it's a true story. So that's sort of what I focused on.
I just want to stop you there, because like, that is what every podcast, I just want people to understand that someone's story is their truth. And even if it didn't happen to you, it is still their truth. So thank you for saying that in such an eloquent way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, it is. I mean, I watch a lot of debates, especially around like homosexuality and Christianity and things. And the one thing that's really hard is that, you know, specifically with transgender people, is what we see happening politically too, is it's like, whether or not we agree or not, there, it's just a fact that these people exist. It's a fact.
Right.
So it's like wild to me when people are trying to make it seem like, you know, intersex people don't exist. Like, they do, they exist. So if you don't have a way to make Christianity work for them, then that's a problem.
Yeah.
Or if they can't live in a country where they feel safe, that's a problem. So I do think that there sometimes can be this aspect of not really just, we all have to agree, like you said, that someone's story is a fact and their experience is a fact. That's not up for discussion.
That's right.
One of the only Bible verses I still quote is, you know, when Moses asked God, who should I tell him sent me? And he said, tell them I am, I exist. And real literally, it means just that, I exist. And Jesus said before Moses, I am, I exist. And for me, I've found that was one of the most important things about, you know, discovering who I am, is just that simple phrase. I am being, I'm not what I do, but I am what I am. And when, you know, I loved what you said, and I couldn't quote it back to you, but that's where it gets for me. In the Sanskrit, with the yogis, they say, it's Sat Chit Ananda in Sanskrit, but it means existence, consciousness, and bliss. And they talk about how those things together, you know, basically mean everything else. You know, everything else comes from that. The first thing is, I know I am who I am. I know who I am. So like Laura said, we should believe them. I believe that's what you believe yourself to be.
Yeah.
And if we would have that basic respect for each other, it would probably change the world, right? Just like love your neighbor, you know?
Totally. And it's, we talk about in the nonprofit a lot, the most powerful thing people can do is to obviously go on their own journey and the timing that makes sense for them. But the stronger you can be in your own identity, the better when dealing with family, because at the end of the day, when family see strength and truth and happiness and contentment and bliss, we just see that people change. They figure it out. When you're not securing yourself, that's when you're leaving like that opening for people to, they feel like they have permission. I can't imagine anyone in my life right now feeling like they have permission to come. And if they did, they just know I'd put a boundary up. So it's like the most amazing, well, I mean, boundaries. I'm sure you've had a billion talks about that, but that's a big one in church. Yeah. Just like trying to teach people how to have boundaries that, you know, that are okay and that are safe. So it is one of those things where like the more you know yourself, the more you're immune to when people kind of try to come in and tell you who you are.
So when you're writing songs and you're recording songs, what is your goal? What do you think this is my main purpose? This is what I hope I can do more than anything else with this.
I'm such a, yeah, like the why thing. There are tons of musicians where just making the music is the why. That's not it for me. For me, it's the sharing. I'm like very stereotypical churchy that way, in the sense that it's like I've always wanted to communicate a message through my music. And some people are just built that way. Like for some people, it's being on stage is the why, just feeling the lights. And I like that, but I'd be happy sitting at home just knowing that someone has resonated with the music. Like that's my why. So I would say that's probably why my music has always had, like when I went to make this record, this one specifically, I had this idea where I wanted to make like a really cool record, like that sounded very cool. But when I started like making it, it started evolving. I realized that to make it cool would mean to sort of take emphasis away from the lyrics and sort of focus on like the sonics being whatever. And I was like, more than ever, I need this record to be like, the lyrics need to come through. So I was happy to sacrifice maybe stylistically where I thought the record would go and sort of go, oh, like it's starting to open up into this thing, like the last song, piano and organ, like all these instruments I grew up with, strings. And, you know, I'm not used to making music like that. Sometimes I like electronic music or different things, but it felt like the music was asking to sort of go into that religious space that I knew growing up for the purpose of getting the message across. So that's always my goal. For good or for bad, sometimes I wish I could just like go in and make a song and not think about what people are going to feel. But I do think that's part of the reason why I've had some success in television and things, because with people in those scenes, they're often looking for like that, like heartfelt performance or something that will really connect with an audience. So yeah, I'm grateful that that is a why for me.
Yeah. So we live two hours north of Kansas City, and you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to. But think Kansas City and think football team, and then you know what kind of question I'm going to ask. What do you think of Taylor Swift?
You know what's so funny? When we first started this interview and you were saying how cold it was, I was going to tell you, but I didn't, that I am a very recent football fan, and I did watch the game in Kansas City the other night where it was negative 20 or something. So cold. My family's always been really into football, and my partner is really into football, and she's kind of been trying to get me more and more into, she's really into sports. So naturally when you're with someone, you start to get interested in what they're interested in. So, I mean, I didn't even know. I just knew there was like a yellow line on the screen that they had to get past. Like that was my football knowledge, but
I love it.
I knew that and I knew what a sack was. That was it. But I'm finally now, like, now I know what a 2-point conversion is. So I feel like I'm doing very well.
Good.
But what do I think of Taylor Swift? I think she's an incredible songwriter. The reality is this, is that whether or not people like the style of her music, let's say, because style is subjective, not everybody's going to like it. You cannot discredit when someone is connecting with people on that massive scale, like where most of the people on the planet have like a personal relationship with her songs. Mm-hmm. Like there are songs where, you know, you ask someone their favorite, they're like, oh, it's this one, it's that one. Like people have these anchored moments in their life around her songs. And generationally, you have young kids to like parents and grandparents that are going to these concerts. So there's no style aside, like there's no arguing that this person is a good communicator in her music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still trying to get my partner over to here to like the Kansas City Chiefs, but that's another podcast.
Oh, you don't like them. You don't like them.
Oh, he gives me so
well,
much.
I had a traumatic moment watching the Dallas Cowboys, who's my team.
Oh boy.
This again let me down in the playoffs. So
yeah, that was a sad game. I will tell you this, I have watched every episode of Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders making the team. So I know about the Dallas Cowboys through the, like, I'm the person when I watch the Dallas Cowboys play, like I would be like, oh my gosh, there's Gina. Like I know the girls on the side of the sidelines, but I didn't know the players. But anyways, I did watch the Dallas game, and that was
sad.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, it was sad. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Feel like before, they don't feel like
So let's talk about the album. So the album okay. is called The Hymnal. And again, kind of summarize the thought behind the whole album EP. What's the idea behind it? Can you summarize that again so people get a good understanding of what it's about?
Yeah, so Hymnal is like an exploration of my journey of reconciling queerness and spirituality. So every song follows, you know, it opens with what it felt like to come out. Some of the questions you ask yourself when you're about to potentially blow open the lives of yourself and your family. And then it kind of goes, you know, through the journey of what it feels like when church community is trying to save you, or when they're like, okay, well, maybe we can get her before she's gone. Like, is there something we can do? Or they're, we know all the phrases, like, you know, all the things that people say and all of the different ways that churches go about dealing with LGBTQ issues, which, you know, they don't deal with them very well. So that there is a bit of that. And then I go into, you know, for some people growing up in churches with purity culture narratives, for people that were gay, those narratives were even more confusing, because specifically around the, like, if you think it, you've done it preaching of, that I grew up with, where it was like, if it was even on your mind, it was something that, so there's like this guarding of your mind, which was very hard when you already felt guilty about being queer. So there's that, a little bit of that. And then, yeah. And then basically I try to take a turn in the record where I start saying, like, okay, how can we fix this? Like, what are things we can do? And that would be like, if something is good, is the message of that is, if something is good, like if God is good, if the church is good, it shouldn't make you choose between loving your child or loving God. Like, why would something good make you choose that? It wouldn't make you choose to lose your friends, to lose the people you love. So just encouraging more community that way. And then, of course, the last song is, I guess, like a beacon of hope for some people who maybe haven't come out yet, but have religious family. And that's what love is all about. And that's a song I wrote for my mom and dad who, who have been so beautiful. And now are, you know, it's one of the hardest things about coming out is that you pass something on to people, even if that's just a thing. Like if I say it to my family, I'm gay. Now that's their thing that they have to deal with. Now they have to come out to their friends and family. Mm-hmm. They have to come out and say, I have a gay daughter or I have a gay son. Mm-hmm. And so that journey of watching them go down that path. And I mean, they've showed me so much love and acceptance, but I know it's been hard. And so it's always a little painful, you know, okay. But it's what helps people grow. I mean, it starts to show the cracks that people need to see. It's like, oh, I told my friend this and they're not showing up for me. Was that really a friend? You know, is that really a friend at all? So it's one of those things where when I look back on my family's journey in general, I would say the times we've got closest is when we've had cracks in the facade or cracks in the church where it's like, someone got in trouble or someone didn't add up, and you have to decide who you're going to choose in that moment. So that's the arc.
And it sounds to me like part of that, the point of that is that it's, you know, that's what love is all about. Love is hard. Mm. But too many times we're taking, you know, what's the easiest route I can take, you know, and still love and still be connected with people and so on. But most of life is hard and healing mm-hmm. is hard. And mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff is hard.
And I think the hardest of all of this is there's this teaching and narrative that there needs to be like tough love around this, or like that if you're nice to someone or you take them for coffee and stay in communion, that you're somehow condoning their behavior. But that is just not the case. None of us have the ability to control someone's behavior. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, sometimes it just comes across to me as condescending when people kind of are like, I'm gonna ice you out until you change. And it's like, when has that ever worked?
To be like me.
Right.
Until you change to be like me, right? I mean,
yeah, when has that ever worked? Yeah. And the biggest question that because I talk to church leaders all the time. And I just ask questions because that's like the best way to have communication about this. And I often will just ask people, well, what do you do? What do you do in your church? Like, what do you do when someone comes to you and says that they're gay? Mm-hmm. And the reality is people spend so much time fighting against what they don't want things to be that they actually don't have a process of how to deal with it. They don't have a safe way to talk about it. They don't have anything in place. So to me, it's like, that's the most frustrating part of all of it, is it's like, you can believe whatever you want, but you have to have a process. These people exist, like we said earlier, like they're here. So unless you have a way to love them, then you're not being a steward of the church. Like, you have to have a way to love them. Yeah.
Yes, a bad believer. So the group, your group is bad believer, but there's a bad believer. Is this a prelude?
It's an intro. Voices,
right? I don't know which ones are not. So I don't know how much to talk about each one, but.
No. So basically we have, like I mentioned, we have so many Zoom calls together that there have been times where I've asked for permission to record people's stories, either to use in promo or to send to people if they need encouragement. So I just had little recordings of multiple people, and I wanted the record to open with their voices. So just, you know, a Sunday school teacher, sacristan at an Anglican church or Episcopalian church, just like real life people, and sort of how they love themselves, and how, like, they're, you know, a couple of the voices are like, you know, I didn't stop being a spiritual person just because I was gay. Like, it's not like my soul died. So it's just a reminder to folks at the beginning that these people exist. So that was why I chose to open with them.
It sounds real effective. So the second one I see on my screen is Brave.
Yeah.
About Brave a little bit.
Yeah. That's the coming out one. So that's the one that's, and really that track is honestly just a list of questions. You know, will you feel the same? Will you touch? My mom and I always had a really beautiful tactile relationship. We were very, you know, we were played with each other's hair, and we're very, very close, and, you know, hold each other, play, rub each other's feet. Like, we're just that kind of mother and daughter. And so I was very afraid because I knew, you know, based on just her upbringing, that she was, you know, conditioned to think that it was gross, you know, the being gay was gross. I don't hold that against her. I thought it was gross too growing up. Like, it's not like, that's just how we were conditioned to think. So I was really worried that she wouldn't want to touch me the same way. So it was like that question, like, will you feel the same? Will you kiss my face? Mm-hmm. Will you, you know, tell me we have a bond that can't be erased? Mm-hmm. Will you feel the same with your hopes in flames? Like, can I be this brave? Can I do this? Can I, and, you know, we have so many people that come into Bad Believer who are not out. And coming out is obviously such a personal journey, and people come out when they should. And you know when you should. Your body tells you when it's time. But it was like, you know, that's, people always feel the same things. Like, especially if they have a good relationship with family. It's like, am I going to ruin it? Will they ever be able to look at me the same? So it's a song that explores that terror.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And We got to contribute to a parenting book, and one of the things when I give, because you have one child and you think that you know everything, and then you have a second child, you realize you don't know anything, and then the third one just confuses you even more. So, but eventually we got to things where, you know, maybe if you boil it all down, there's a couple of things, you know, I wanted my children to think for themselves. And I also really encourage my daughters to be brave. Mm-hmm. And one of our daughters is a nurse, and she's kind of carried that on to her. She has two daughters also. I think, you know, anytime we can inspire bravery in others, and being brave enough to, wow, what a huge thing, you know, how are you going to respond? That I can't imagine much that's any braver than that.
No, yeah, well, it's wild because there are a couple songs, this song and the love song to my family, where honestly, it can apply to people who aren't LGBTQ. I mean, anytime right. that you are in a church system where you have to disappoint someone, I mean, telling a family member you're no longer a Christian arguably could be even harder for that family member than telling them you're gay.
Yeah.
Like, so that is, so really it depends on the situation, but these songs can apply to anyone who has to, yeah, had to have that brave moment where you're like, this is who I am.
I am. Yep.
Yeah. Running on empty.
Yeah. That's the first upbeat one. Yeah. That one is the one that's about church fatigue, where it's like, I'm exhausted as you're trying to save me. And I would say the second verse of that song kind of sums it up, which is they say that nothing separates his love, God's love. So am I still a child of God? Because I can't tell from all you're saying. No one's winning in this holy war. What are we even fighting for? Our only law to love now missing. That's kind of it. So it's like a little, it's like a baby hand slap, like a little, like, stop doing that. You know, you just need to love. You just need to love. And, you know, whether, you know, we all feel, I'm sure, feel very differently about what sin is and what, what's the word, conviction. I'm sure we have lots of different thoughts on that. But in the traditional evangelical mindset, if there is like sin, the way we think of, and conviction, then that will be settled. God will figure that out. So you don't have to try to save me. That is not your job. Right. That's what that song is. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So true love waits. Let me just preface this by saying 300 interviews, lots of them women, almost every single one. None of them say anything good about purity culture. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was one of the biggest things, you know, that traumatized them. Do you agree? I mean, knows.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. The fact that this is what I said, it actually goes back to our other thing. I am not here specifically, but in general, to have a theological argument with theologians about what is encompassed by sexual immorality, which is the thing.
Yeah.
But I can attest, and you can attest, that something is wrong when every single person that's been on your podcast has trauma around it. Mm-hmm. So that either means that we didn't interpret it right, we're not teaching about it right, or we're not allowing for there to be flexibility in the fact that we have the same sexual morality lesson for a 14-year-old that we do for a 54-year-old out of a marriage. So I think that we haven't done a great job in churches of making people feel proud of their bodies. I mean, especially with women, like, I was on stage, so I always felt like I had to cover up and I was ashamed of my curves. But yeah, there are some people who that teaching really worked well for, and that's great. Like, so again, I would never invalidate that story because then I'd be a hypocrite for doing that. But you have to look at a trend. If the overwhelming amount of trend is that people are coming out of this saying that this was really hard, then you just can't ignore that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. So many people come on and talk about it on your podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Every woman deconstructing has something to say about purity culture. And we had a speech given in our online conference. And she called it Reclaiming Marital Sex from Purity Culture. You know, and over and over again. And you said it worked well for somebody, but I guess that all of those were probably males, you know, who it was okay that they couldn't control themselves and it was women's fault. So, you know.
There were different rules. There were different rules for men for sure, but also like what is problematic, and this is I see this in churches when they deal with LGBTQ issues too, is that it's so arbitrary. Like one church would say, okay, this is okay before you're married, these certain things. And you go to a different church that's like, well, no, like you can't do any of these things. Or another church that'd be like, well, you know, like, oh my goodness, the term heavy petting, like these terms, you know. And again, we're all just taking information we learned when we were young and kind of feeding it. But similar to the way that the like conversion therapy movement failed because everyone was lying, it's a similar thing where all of us were growing up being like, oh yeah, I'm good. Like I'm good. I'm still being pure. And, but the turmoil that it caused on the relationship, that's why in some of the lyrics, it's like taking turns. Like you start to actually feel like your partner becomes like a stumbling block in your faith. So there's a lot of projection of different things on your partner. So it just ends up kind of killing a lot of young relationships because it's just so heavy.
You said this earlier. You said, you know, we didn't ever talk about what makes a good relationship. You know, there wasn't as much teaching in all of that. And it, not to mention it was led by an 18-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
And so on, you know, whatever.
The youth pastor. Yeah, the youth pastor who's like often only a couple years older than the teenagers. Yeah. Yeah.
And many of, never mind. There's a lot of things I could say. So my favorite song was If There Is a God. Thank you. You want to talk about that, Annie?
Yeah, that one's definitely the most searing. Again, I never really wanted, it never works to go into conversation with people and be combative. And I don't feel like the tone of the record is very combative at all. I wanted to make something that someone who is churched and maybe believed different things could still listen and that hopefully they could take something away from it. So I knew that coming in with like an angry tone wasn't the best way, but this song would probably be the most pointed. Mm-hmm. And the idea would be like a lot of us feel is that the kind of Christianity we're seeing, Christian nationalism, different things, is just like so far from Jesus. And that's the central, it's like if there was a God and he sent his son, like he wouldn't recognize what we've become. Like this isn't even looking at all like what the early church would have been. And so, yeah, and this isn't, what I'm saying isn't new. A lot of us talk about how this social radical who was turning tables has all of a sudden been like whitewashed so severely to this place where it's like Jesus wouldn't be friends with a gay person. Like it's literally the antithesis to what we're seeing in scripture. So it's just sort of a callback and a reminder to the Jesus we do see in scripture.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about what love is all about, but there's one in between there that's if something is good.
Yeah. That's the one that I was trying to, that's my Reach Across the Aisle song where it's like, okay, you've lost people. This song was inspired by my girlfriend. My girlfriend used to work for Young Life. She worked for Young Life for 10 years and I don't think she'd be upset with me sharing some of her story, but she lost a lot of people when she came out, like people that she loved, like people that she was in leadership with, people she considered family. And it was just so painful. And I know that it was also painful for them. So again, that's the humanity in it. The humanity is not like the pointing of fingers, but like the recognizing that both sides are losing. Mm-hmm. Like you lose when you lose, you know, if you decide that God doesn't accept who I am and you feel like you have to take that on and we can't be in community anymore, that is devastating for both people. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to kind of like acknowledge the pain on both sides and just to sort of remind people that, yeah, if something is good, I don't know why it would be forcing us to not go to people's weddings, to not walk your daughter down the aisle. I mean, just these decisions you can't take back, to not being, I mean, the stories in my community are wild, just not acknowledging grandchildren. You know, these are children and it's like, well, yeah, but they came from this relationship. So I can't morally like be engaged in their lives. And it's like, what, how does that feel like Jesus at all? Mm-hmm. So just like a reminder that can't be how things are supposed to be.
I remember one of the speakers in the Leaning Forward conference said, her message was to men. It was called How to Speak Women. And it was pretty good. And she said, but she said, what you need to understand is the to men, she said, the patriarchy hurts you too. Not just us. Speaking of women, it hurts you too. And I think, yeah, that's something that, that people don't realize. And it, maybe they don't even feel bad about hurting people because they think they're sinful or beneath them or something. But that kind of hatred is hurting them too.
Yeah.
And
yes,
I don't think the church sees that. Broadly, it doesn't see that. Doesn't see that.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. And the, you know what the most devastating thing, and like, the people in my community, because they know what it feels like to not be accepted and loved, are the most loving and accepting people. I mean, when you know what it feels like to not have something, you, the amount of space and love that people give to their families who don't accept them is like mind blowing. And it is like coming from a space of like, well, I don't want my mom to feel like she's lost her daughter. Even though the mom is like constantly quoting scripture or not acknowledging her children or whatever it might be, there's still that like love there. And to me, I'm like, that's like the love I think of when I think of like Christ's love. Mm-hmm. It's just like sacrificial. And obviously it's important to have boundaries. You're not supposed to be like a punching bag.
Right.
But where there is like a lot of people who are holding that space, and because, and they often think like you just did, it's like, I know that she can't even see that what she's actually doing is hurting herself. Like she's actually ripping her child from her arms. And the ability for people in my community to acknowledge that in spite of their own pain is like a truly beautiful thing.
That person that made that statement, when her daughter came out, the church literally said, you need to choose between us and your daughter. And she did instead did a TED talk that has over 1 million views that's titled I Chose My Daughter.
It's beautiful, but it's actually like, it's wild that that is something that people would be like, wow. But it, when you're in that system, it can feel like that the other choice is the one you should make.
Right. So I have one more question and Laura has one more.
I do.
It's your normal question.
I got it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We a lot of times we write notes to each other and we have signals, I guess, or something. Most of them are probably for me to just be quiet.
No, not like true.
The big question we ask everybody is, if you had a billboard, we never prepare anybody for this, but if you had a billboard that all the world could see, what? That's an old man thing to say, all the world you could see. So if you had a billboard that everyone could see, what would you write on your billboard?
Ooh. Oh my gosh, there's so much that I would want to write on my billboard. One thing.
But I always tell people it's your billboard. It can be as long as you want.
You can have little side buckets to get on the side.
Slow down traffic. Yeah. Just, you know.
Yeah, I would say that. I would say that we are more similar than we think. And that love is just an arm's length away. So do what you can to know people that are different than you. Because maybe people will surprise you.
Yeah. That is so good.
That is good.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so my question, my final question to you is, how can our listeners get in touch with you or find your community or just hear, know more about your music, find your music? Tell us all the things.
Okay, perfect. Well, I would love that. I'd love to keep in touch with people. So on all social media platforms, my handle is Adeline Music. So it's Adaline Music, all one word. So that's the same handle for everything, YouTube. Okay. Instagram, everything. And then Bad Believer is Bad Believer Community on Instagram. But also you can go to www.badbeliever.org And then my website is www.adelinemusic.com.
Wonderful. Yeah. And we'll get all that stuff put shared on the show notes
and the complete bio.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to do the complete bio. I don't think I realized I sent you the one that had that much stuff, but
that's all right. Sure.
You can post whatever you want.
I'll search around and find. I'll find what I need, especially since I have a press kit. I feel important. I have that. That's so good.
Oh, but, you know, just doing what I can to keep it going.
That's right.
Yeah. For the listeners out there, we want to thank you for tuning in. We kind of hate to just promote all the time and say like and subscribe and that kind of stuff, but we do appreciate you. And someone told me a story today about they've been listening to the podcast. They're getting lots out of it. We like hearing that, not because we need to boost our ego, but just because it makes us feel good that some, you know, the work we put into things is being appreciated. Anyway, I invite you, as always, though, to be where you are, to be who you are, and be at peace.
Just when I thought I couldn't love you more, you showed up for me like never before. A love so pure, you question it's real. The real deal. When the shoe doesn't drop, when the pinching stops, when the shame starts to fade in the light of the sun, when you come out of hiding to arms that are waiting. Both taking time to understand how to shift when things don't go as planned. But like a house that's built on the rock, storms roll off, we still stand. When the shoe doesn't drop, when the pinching stops, when the shame starts to fade in the light of the sun. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Papios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.